Philip Morgan.
Liston Witherill, my confidence buddy. How are you doing?
Is it helping?
I think talking to you every week does increase my confidence.
Really?
Like HubSpot was right in that article. It helps to have a confidence buddy.
Oh, wow. That is quite the reference.
That just stuck with me for some reason. Whenever we were talking episodes ago about confidence, you pulled up some stupid HubSpot article. And just the idea of a confidence buddy just stuck with me. I'm in a power pose here in the podcasting shack.
Yep.
I'm like confident through the fucking roof here. How are you today, my friend?
I can tell you're in your Superman pose and not the yoga one, the actual Superman. There's this woman, I forget her name. Yeah, I'm just going to go with I forget her name and not try to guess what it is. Okay. But she published a TED Talk years ago and made the argument that you can become more confident if you just have the body language of a confidence person. Now, There's related research that says that if you laugh, so in India, they have laughing sessions or like laughing groups. Have you heard of this, Philip?
No, this is news. What happens in a laughing group?
Well, you laugh together.
Okay.
And it actually does have a measurable effect on your happiness and your mood. Just the act of laughing. So similarly, if you ask people if someone's actually smiling or if they're faking it, Almost 100% of the time they can pick out the person who's actually smiling and not faking it, right?
Right.
With laughing, though, if you just laugh, you will be happier. Okay?
Wow. Okay.
So when they say laughter is the best medicine, it's actually quite true.
Yeah.
However, unlike this laughter study, which is there's a lot of research on that, this woman who claimed that if you just stand in your power pose and you'll be more confident, my understanding is that has been completely refuted, although it seems to be making its way around internet circles. So if you're listening to this, dear listener, and you disagree with me, feel free to send me hate mail, liston@liston.io. However, I think it's a bunch of bullshit. So anyway.
They better be in there. Power pose when they hit send.
Well, obviously they will be if they're going to email me, Philip. I joke. Yeah, things are good, man. How would a confidence buddy work anyways? I'm so curious. Like, because in order for you to have more confidence, we were talking about this before we started recording, when someone is seeking coaching or even consulting help, they want to believe that you're confident and excited about working together, right? Because that gives them a peek into what the future might look like in that moment. And it makes them feel like, oh, this could really happen. Like maybe Philip sees something in me that I don't see in myself. And that's valuable. But I'm wondering if you have a confidence buddy and it's not totally sincere because it's like, oh, it's Monday again. I got to send Philip another text message to tell him how great he is. Like, does that really help? Like, is it like the laughing or is it like the confidence pose?
Yeah, I'm trying to interpret this whole idea of a confidence buddy.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, like, if it really were something that you were doing sincerely, I would imagine you'd try to say, like, okay, here's something I think you do really well that you may have just started taking for granted or not noticing, or here's something that's great about you. But how much could you really do that before, even with the most amazing person, you're kind of running out of material?
Well, so one thing that I should do more often, but I do sometimes, is if I'm feeling kind of down, I'll go through and kind of read like fan mail that I've gotten or compliments that people have given me for the work that I've done. That helps a little bit. It's a little bit like, what was this? Al Franken's SNL skit, Stuart Smalley.
Yeah. I'm good enough.
Yeah. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And doggone it, people like me. It's a little bit like that, but it was sincere when the person wrote it to you unsolicited. So I think that that's helpful.
So my wife and I are both self-employed. We sort of take turns going through ups and downs, right? And it's really nice if we're out of sync on that. Like if I'm up and she's down or vice versa, because we can at least try to help the other person. So she was not long ago going through a down period. And I just happened while I was listening to podcasts, my podcast player landed upon me interviewing her for my podcast. And I was listening to it. I was like, oh my God, this woman sounds so competent, so together, so smart, so insightful.
Right.
Yeah, I went to her and I was like, you got to listen to yourself on this thing. I know you've listened to yourself before, but you're feeling kind of down now. Listen to yourself. You will be impressed. And maybe that's, maybe we can be our own confidence buddy that way, is you can kind of look back at a sort of, I don't know, peak performance or sometime when you did really well, and maybe that helps.
My wife calls that my podcast voice.
Oh, your podcast voice.
She thinks it's totally put on.
Really? Well, listen.
Obviously, I don't talk like that.
Yeah.
But not put on in the sense of being insincere, but in the sense of like me being a little bit more energetic and outgoing on the podcast, which is, I think, fair.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
So, Philip, let's get down to business here. We're not going to get down to business today. So, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that Philip and I talk about kind of the behind the scenes of our businesses or things that we just may not talk about in our own podcast feeds or to our email list or on our websites, but things that are meaningful to us. Today, we're going to get a little personal, huh, buddy?
Yeah.
Not too personal. Don't worry. Don't sweat it. Not too personal, but personal enough to talk about having hobbies outside of all of this work stuff. Now, I do want to give a disclaimer, Philip, and that is neither one of us, neither you nor me, have children. So we're going to talk about hobbies. Maybe your hobbies have been put on the back burner because of your kids, but I do have a response for how I would handle that. With me not having kids, but I have a response for how I would handle that. So we can chat about that at some point. But yeah, hobbies, Philip. I guess my first question is, do you have any and why do they matter?
Now, yes. And across my whole life, even more so, yes. Meaning, like, I've always had one or more things that I'm putting like an extraordinary amount of effort into. I think that has to be maybe put on some kind of spectrum. Like, I guess there are people who like build race cars and then like almost every weekend they're out racing them or something like that. I don't have a hobby like that. That's a yet another level of effort and commitment beyond where I'm at. But yeah, like hobbies have always been important to me. That goes as far back as junior high for me when like I had to have a radio controlled airplane. So this was me in the 80s, very economically middle class parents. So relatively big family, four kids, one wage earner, and not a super high paid one. So there was just wasn't any money for that. So I mowed lawns and worked summer jobs until I could buy this airplane. So like I've always wanted to be doing something or building something or learning something or trying something that shows up as a hobby. So yeah, still important. For me, starting a business was, I don't want to say equivalent to having a child. I know two things. I know people who are parents don't love having that compared to stuff that they consider not as hard. And I know people who've actually been to grad school don't like having grad school compared to some major life experience like hiking the Appalachian Trail. I can tell you those two things. So I won't compare it to having a child, but starting a business for me kind of competed with the time and energy that I would spend on hobbies. So some of those have fallen off. How about you? You have hobbies, right?
I do. So I would say probably my number one hobby aside from, well, I should include that, right? Because the number one thing I do is spend time with my wife. Like, let's not include that in hobbies.
It feels very weird to call that a hobby.
Well, hobbies imply something personal, like that you do by yourself or with a small group of people that are away from your family or work life. So I exercise a lot. I've been an athlete all my life. There have been times when I've been a couch athlete, but not lately.
Wait a second. When did you start becoming an athlete? Or thinking of yourself in that way, or
as an athlete?
Yeah, like when did that start for you?
Probably like junior high.
Okay, and basketball, right?
Yeah, basketball, baseball. I played volleyball and basketball in high school. But I played, just to put it in perspective, basketball was my only hobby. in high school and even after high school, I still played a lot, but in high school, I would play like 4 to 6 hours a day during the basketball season.
Wow, that's so many hours. Cool. Okay. Just was curious, like how you got started down that road.
Yeah. So it's evolved, right? So recently I took up running, which feels very weird because I probably have run less than 10 miles in my entire life prior to like August.
You mean off of the basketball court?
Yeah, no, like just running to run. Like that's never been something I've done or enjoyed. But weightlifting, my wife and I go for really long hikes on a pretty regular basis. But yeah, I ran a half marathon on Sunday. So like that is brand new.
Yeah.
But I also make music. Like you, I think I've let work, for better and for worse, get in the way of some of the hobbies that I really enjoy. Like making music is something that I really, really love to do.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much fallen off, I would say.
Ah, so sad. Okay, here's my list of hobbies from the very beginning. The first was reading, because that was like an escape from life being limited, right? Like the imagination, it just fueled my imagination. I read sci-fi and geeky science books, and I always had that kind of a draw towards that end of things.
Mm-hmm.
I built that radio controlled airplane in like junior high. I couldn't even drive. I wasn't old enough to drive at that point. So my mom would have to drive me to the model airplane field to fly it. I got a telescope. So that wasn't like a serious hobby. And then in college, I just became like fascinated with studio engineering. That was sort of a hobby, more of an interest though, because it's like, how many opportunities do you have to actually do that?
Mm-hmm.
Although I was like the sound guy for a band in college. Playing guitar was a hobby. And then, homebrewing was a hobby for a while.
Okay.
I had a sort of interest in old muscle cars, but really like no desire to fix them up or patience with owning an old car. So that was a sort of stupid hobby that I got into for a while. That was also known as a money pit. I became fascinated with Hammond organs for a while. And at one point I owned like two of them and had three of them in my house. One of which I fixed up, like it worked, but it's so complicated. I added this feature called foldback. So I bought a kit from some guy on eBay that had a bunch of parts and then sort of used it to upgrade this one Hammond organ to sound better. And photography has been a hobby for me. And then recently I've started building stereo systems, which I'm a little bit embarrassed about how much time and money I spend on that. But that's been fun because I just love music. That's something you and I have in common. And I'm not so much a creator, but I just enjoy hearing music in a way that's just like carries you someplace different. And so I'm always looking for that in listening to music. So that's like the list of hobbies. I might be leaving out one or two that I've had various levels of interest in throughout my life.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, I was realizing how much alignment we have, because photography is a hobby of mine that I wouldn't say I actively pursue, but I have good equipment. I've not studied, maybe an overstatement, but I've read a lot about composition and lighting and how to manipulate the camera to get what I want out of it. Funny enough, I feel like I've come full circle where I'm just like, anybody should be able to take great photos on their phones, because the phone cameras, if you have a phone that was made in the last year or two, it's good enough to take, I'd say, gallery worthy photos.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of iPhone photos hanging in galleries. Also, you have a famous art photographer uncle.
I do.
Which I wonder if that gives you some kind of, is that where the interest came from or some other place?
No, you know what's, I'll tell you a funny story. My uncle is Huntington Witherell, and he, like so many people, studied under Ansel Adams. So grew up in LA, and then he moved up to Monterey when he was a pretty young man, I think, and studied under Ansel Adams and now runs workshops all over, which I guess you attended one. Yes?
That wasn't him. That was John Wimberly, somebody else. But I've seen your uncle's photographs, and lots of them are really beautiful.
Yeah. And so like his early work really basically looked like Ansel Adams photos of like Yosemite and other iconic natural landscapes in California. His more recent stuff is like photo manipulation kind of thing, where like it no longer looks like a photo by the time he's done with it.
Yeah.
So at Thanksgiving, or I think it was Thanksgiving, one of the holidays, I said, "Hey, Hunter, I got a new Canon camera." This is years ago, 10 years ago or more. Must have been more. But let's say 10 years ago. "I got this new camera. I'm really excited about it. Do you have any tips about how I can take better photos?" And he goes, "Yeah, I don't know, like read a book or something." And I was like, "Okay, like what kind of book should I get? And like what kinds of information should I be looking for in the book?" Uh-huh. And he goes, "You know, the best thing you can do is just take a lot of photos."
Right.
And so, of course, you know, me being me, I started to dig into what he meant by that. He had just gone on a trip around the U.S., I think, to do these workshops that he puts on. But what he would do also is he would like stop at, he'd do a museum series or like a car series, and he'd stop at a car museum and take photos while he was on the road. I said, "Okay, so, well, I saw you just release this book about car photos that you did. How many photos did you take for that book?" And he said just on one of the trips, which only yielded something like 8 or 10 usable photos that he was happy with, he took 15,000 photos.
Wow.
In that moment, I was like, oh, interesting. It's just like the advice of, if you do a lot of things, you're more likely to get lucky.
Yeah.
Right? So like if luck occurs 10% of the time, do 100 things, not 10. You'll be more satisfied with the results.
Right, right.
And it's kind of his advice. And I thought that was interesting also. Now, overall, I think this is terrible photography advice. Like I would tell people like, you should understand what the rule of thirds means and like why certain images are more interesting from a compositional perspective than others. And like how to manipulate lighting. And just like one good piece of advice I recently got was choose one object and shoot that single object for like 10 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you'll be surprised by the new ways you see it by the end. And I was like, that's actually really good advice. So anyway, that's the long story of Huntington Witherell.
Wow, I'm surprised he wasn't more helpful, or maybe that was all the advice he really could give.
You know, I've never talked to him about it, and I'm absolutely certain he's never going to hear this podcast, but I would tell this to him directly. He was not helpful, not terribly helpful.
Leave me alone, kid.
Yeah. One hobby that I used to have that I no longer have is rapping. So I used to write and record my own music.
Yeah.
I still produce music and like, I don't know, for it's just much more immediate to me, but yeah, I'm no longer recording any vocals. So that's something that got lost by the wayside. Do you like in your hobbies now, I guess working out or fitness is not a hobby of yours, really. It seems like you do it begrudgingly and in fits and starts.
That's probably pretty accurate. So I don't know, let's say 4 months ago, sounds about right. I hired a personal trainer, which means I started paying to go to a personal trainer. And I've gone continuously since then, except for trips out of the country or the trip to Spain, one trip out of the country. So I wouldn't say, well, in the past before that, yeah, exercise was something that was kind of an afterthought, not anywhere near a hobby. I've enjoyed things like hiking and camping, but I'm not sure I would call those a hobby at any point, really. So yeah, it feels important though, and it kind of ties into where I was wanting to go with this, which is I think hobbies are important for people like us, and I think I can support that in the same way that exercise is important. You're going to age better if you do some strength training, most likely. Most people are, right? You're going to age better if you intentionally exercise, what do they recommend, 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. But hobbies feel like that, but for the mind. Like more and more, I just realize how demanding the work that I do is, like from a stress perspective. And I mean, just to be clear, I love what I do. I have invented what is probably a dream job for myself.
Yep.
So I'm not complaining, but it feels like bordering on complaining just to even acknowledge that it's hard on me. Like, I also invented a job that is demanding of me, and I don't think I would want it any other way, but I feel like I need things that are interesting and it's also kind of demanding, but in a different way than my job. Like, that's kind of what I need for my hobbies, is that they have to be kind of give me an opportunity to not think about my work. Like, they have to kind of pull me away or take me away from that. So I'm kind of curious, is that what you're looking for in your hobbies? Or do you just pick them because, hey, this is what I enjoy?
I think one of the reasons I've been so into fitness over, I guess, like the last 3 years, it's like my religion, basically. I spend a lot of time doing it. I really like it. I find it really rewarding. But I also had a couple what I would consider panic attacks where I was just so stressed about, I gave up a six-figure job to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And a few months in, I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, this,
woo, yep.
Like, it was great for 4 months and then I haven't had anyone paying me for a while. And like, what am I doing? And like, what's the cost going to be to my family? And like, am I ever going to get out of this? So I think there were two times I pretty distinctly remember where like my heart rate went up and I started to feel dizzy and I just like needed to step away from my desk. And I was like wondering if I was going to pass out. I realized I really needed an outlet.
Right.
And one of the things that I hadn't been honoring was my need for physical movement. Like, I was out of shape. I was eating whatever I wanted. I was drinking too much. I was smoking weed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, okay, I need to like do something about this. And so there was that. And also, Philip, this is a funny story. I was hanging out with one of my wife's family friends. His name's Bill, and he's a world-renowned emergency surgeon.
Oh, wow.
Travels the world and gives talks on emergency operations.
Wow.
I was having brunch with him or something, and he asked me, like, what do you do for exercise or something like that? Or no, I asked him, because he's like 70 at the time, and he was going to go on like a 15-mile hike.
Okay.
And I was like, damn, Bill, like, where do you have the time? Like, you're a world-renowned surgeon and you're still in good enough shape to go do that. And he goes, oh yeah, I do P90X every morning.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, fuck my life. Like, what am I doing wrong here? Right? I'm like, this guy is like totally successful, still exercising. Like, I'm not even making time to exercise and I'm feeling this stressed out. Like, there's no excuse. And so I started doing that, and I wouldn't say it was to fully escape work. For me, physical exertion helps me mentally to sort of quiet the mind a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I also, with running, one thing that I love about it is, you know, like, I just ran a race and that was a way different experience, obviously, than running alone.
Right.
And there is something like, I want to stick with this pack. Like, they're running faster than I normally do and I want to see if I can do it.
Right.
And like, that pushed me to have a better time, and I did. But I also like just pushing myself to get out there and do it and go, okay, I'm going to run a little bit faster today, right? Or I'm going to run a little bit longer today. And no one else is out here making me do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I was wondering, like, when you were building your stereo system, like, there's that element of like, maybe not self-competition, but an element of alchemy of like, there was this pile of parts before, and now because I showed up time and time again, I made this thing that now works and I can enjoy for a long time.
Yeah, actually, I've built two of them, and the first one is mostly gone now. And it was interesting to see how the second time around I picked like a slightly more demanding thing. Like, the first time, the cabinets were made out of plywood and painted. And the second time, the cabinets were made out of plywood and painted, but like, I put some walnut veneer on the face of one of them, or both of them rather. And that was like a level up in terms of difficulty. It's immensely satisfying to do the building. And then by the end of it, I was kind of sick of it. And then it's satisfying to have these things sitting in the house every day, reminding me that I can design and build something essentially from scratch. Do you enjoy doing hobbies that are things other people do where you can kind of discuss them with them, or is it more of a solo kind of a thing?
I like talking about my hobbies, right? Mm-hmm. So like if someone brings up music and I find out that they produce music, I'm like, oh, what do you use? And like, just ask them all kinds of questions about like their process and how they got into it and what they love about it. But it's mostly solitary. Like I'm not actively exchanging information. Like I'll go read articles online. Like I was just telling my buddy how I started running to get better cardio shape. And now all of a sudden, like I'm reading books about it and looking things up online and like figuring out how I can get in more steps per minute. Like I never thought about any of these kinds of things, right? But I become a little obsessive about the things that I do, but I'm not seeking buddies to do it.
Yeah.
Whereas in my business, I very much do that often. I think that's part of our relationship, Philip, is like we're buddies in our businesses, and like entrepreneurship is very fucking lonely. And I would recommend, if you're listening to this and you don't have not a confidence buddy, but a business buddy, you should get one. Someone that you think is really smart and you trust their opinion and they're doing something similar to what you're doing. There's tremendous value in that. But for me with running, I guess like I'm not trying to be the best at running. I guess I'm trying to be a better version of me, but it feels like the stakes are pretty low versus my business.
Yeah.
What about you? Is that something that you're seeking? Like, are you seeking a layer of community or feedback?
I don't know if this is nostalgia, but I feel like there was kind of the internet before Facebook reached critical mass, and then there's the internet now. It just seemed like there were more interesting, weird niche, like people doing their hobby and then posting about it on some website. I'm not necessarily talking like a GeoCities site like that far back, but it just seems like there's less of that now. I don't know where it's gone. I don't know if that was just like, well, that was the early stage of the internet and you're just not going to see that. But there used to be all these websites of like people building crazy speaker systems and then posting about how they did it and posting photos. And I feel like there's less of that now, but maybe there's not. Maybe I just have sort of gotten hedonistically adapted. I don't think I'm looking for a big social component in my hobbies.
So I was going to say, I think you're wrong. I think it's actually the opposite thing. I don't think people have been like relegated to the fringes of the internet.
Yeah.
I think it's like omnipresent. It's like so available that it's no longer like, oh, there's this one community for this thing. So like I use this app called Strava, which documents all my running.
Okay.
In addition to my fancy GPS watch, right? But I'm sure that if I went to Facebook, I could find not just a running group, but a Portland running group, and maybe even a subport, like a 5K Portland running group.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? I'm sure I could do that. I guess I'm not really looking for more friends. Like that's not why I'm doing the hobby. So I think maybe part of it is motivation. Like my motivation isn't to have social contact. In fact, I don't want to talk when I run.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm treating it like I'm getting this shit done. And you're not going to get in my way.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to operate on someone else's schedule, right? When I feel like it, I want to put my shoes on and walk out my door and go knock out my run for the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess maybe motivation is a big factor.
Yeah. I'm definitely more and more as I think about hobbies, I'm like, it just has to have this quality of something I can really be absorbed by. So, stuff that gets me out of the house is good. Stuff that benefits that kind of focus flow state is good. But yeah, man, I used to do a lot more photography when I had more energy. And I used to have a lot more energy when I wasn't working for myself. Because I would have these boring jobs that I could just do. I could work an hour or two a day. I would be at the office 8 hours, but it was really just an hour or two of work. So I just had so much more energy back then for hobbies.
Yeah, I think also for me, like my life has changed a little bit. I work more now than I work for myself, which show me an entrepreneur who doesn't do that.
Right.
Or if you're Seth Godin would call us freelancers because we operate solo businesses, but whatever, like self-employed people, like you end up working more. I think what is true is like every evening I walk my dog. I walk my dog in the morning. I don't know if that's a hobby or not. But I listen to podcasts and audiobooks, Audible. But we also watch TV at night. And in the old days with that time, sure, I would watch TV sometimes, but there were times when I'd sit and make music for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I could still do that, but like, I also like hanging out with my wife, even if we're watching a show and that's what we're sharing.
Right.
So it's almost like seasons of life, I think, has an influence on the hobbies that I have. But one thing's for sure, man, is exercise. I got to have it. Otherwise, I start to go crazy.
So if you were going to add another hobby, what would it be?
Oh my God. Add a hobby.
Yeah. You know, in your ample free time.
If I could add a hobby, what would it be? I think it would be music. I think two things about music I've always regretted is not taking singing lessons and not taking piano lessons.
Huh. Yeah, I think that's what it would be for me. Like, I got a guitar some months ago and have been slowly pecking away at playing, and then went to Spain and haven't picked it up since then. And that feels like the thing I would want to get better at that looks like a hobby for me.
Yeah.
Also music.
I've thought about taking acting classes and maybe like doing like improv or something.
I knew you were going to say improv.
But that's honestly like, that's more of a professional motivation. I think that would make me better at my job and better at like creating content and just being interesting in general.
Right.
So it's that, of course, I would have personal interest in it, but it's not the same as like, I'm going to go run and like there's no business bleed over other than like the mental stamina I get from it and the physical benefits.
Yeah. Would you take something like a screenwriting class, like coming at writing, but from the more entertaining perspective?
So you've heard of masterclass.com, I'm sure.
I think so. Yeah.
They have a few different screenwriters, like Aaron Sorkin has a class. Shonda Rhimes, I think I'm getting her name right, who's a very famous writer for episodic TV shows. One thing that I've realized this year, despite publishing over 200 consecutive blog posts, is sitting down to write for a prolonged time is not my superpower.
Yeah.
I think there would still be benefit, but I think I'd be more keen on taking like Alex Bloomberg has a telling stories.
Yeah, right.
Class, or Seth Godin, I'm probably actually going to buy this, has one on podcasting.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just like that medium better. I'd be open to the idea of telling better stories. Like, yes, absolutely.
I just now realized it's the first time I've ever seen a picture of Ken Burns, and boy, that haircut is something else. It's like a bowl haircut.
For some reason, when you said Ken Burns, the first thing that came to mind was David Attenborough, which makes no sense.
Look on masterclass.com at the picture of Ken Burns. It's like, I haven't seen a bowl cut like that since the 80s, I don't think.
Oh, man. And I think he also dyes his hair. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that.
Yeah.
I'd say he's, what, 75 or so? Something like that?
Yeah, the facial hair is not matching the top of the head hair.
Facial hair is not matching, nor are the eyebrows. And his hair is deep brown, very deep brown and shiny. There's no way that his hair looks like that.
They've got David Mamet teaches dramatic writing. That looks interesting. When I think about like, okay, what would be outside the realm of what I do for money that would make me better at what I do for money? So it feels like something like that would be worth exploring.
Well, so cooking, I wouldn't say it's a hobby because I've never really treated it the way I would treat a hobby, which is to get deeply obsessed with it and dig into the science of it.
Yeah.
But that's something my wife enjoys and we could do together. So actually, I promise this at the top of the show, which is if you have kids, how would you incorporate your hobbies? So I've heard people say, like, I have no time for hobbies. For me, I just mentioned cooking or fitness. Like, I would just involve my children in those hobbies. So, right, if we're watching the Great British Baking Show, I tell my kid, pick one of the things on the show and we're going to make it. Mm. Right. And then we would make it together. And then we try it and we go, oh, that's awful. Why is it awful? What do we do wrong? What do we need to do different next time? It would be not only a thing that I could do with them, and we could get joy just out of the act of doing it, but it could also be a way to learn, how do I do new things in life? There's people on TV and they're actually, believe it or not, human beings, and we can do what they're doing. So let's go do it and let's see what happens. So in the master class, like cooking, I think is one that would be interesting to me. Judd Apatow teaching comedy would be interesting to me.
Yeah.
I've actually taken the Hans Zimmer scoring, teaches film scoring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which he's just so great, dude. Cause he's like, he'll like play a note and he'll be like, ooh, that's a cheeky one. You could just tell like he is in his natural environment when he's sitting behind a keyboard.
That's a cheeky one. Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, I have no advice for how you would do hobbies if you had kids other than trying to get them really interested in cleaning the house or taking the garbage out or cooking food. Those would all be great hobbies for kids to have.
Well, cooking, yeah. One thing that I've tried to do is like find overlap, right? So I love fitness. My wife and I love the outdoors. We both love to hike. Like, let's go for hikes. Like, that's something we do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go for a walk every day, which we do every day. One thing I learned early on in this business is if I wanted to do the things I wanted and not feel like drained of energy, I needed to figure out how to have leverage across different spheres of my life in a single activity. There was no other way to fit everything in. Did we cover it, Philip?
I'm going to work out after this.
God, yeah, you lazy bastard. Get out of here.
Not a hobby, but good for the mind.
Gosh, I could do a whole episode just on my feelings about why you should work out, especially as an entrepreneur, but I'll keep it short here. I don't know if you feel this, Philip, but like there's this trade-off of like feeling tired afterwards. But if you're healthy, you're going to have more energy on balance. Right? Maybe the day you work out, if you only work out 2 days a week, you may feel a little bit more tired or sluggish, but mentally you're going to be much sharper. And I think also just for me, one of the big things is pushing past your limits, right? So the way muscle to build your muscle and to get stronger works is you have to reach a failure point. And so usually that takes a little bit longer than you would have guessed in the beginning. And you start to learn like, oh, I actually didn't give myself enough credit. There's way more that's possible than I'm actually doing. And I think that's valuable too. So anyway, there's lots of huge mental benefits from athletics, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you think, just call it mental emotional toughness. I think that's cultivated by working out a certain way. I mean, you could certainly go to the gym and never do anything that really challenges you or pushes you beyond what you think you can do. But I have this feeling that at some level, self-employment requires that. And I wonder if that's also another spillover effect from the right kinds of strength training as you develop a kind of mental toughness that helps you out in other places too.
Any physical activity where you can create a long-term change that you can measure will have that same effect, I think. So whether it's bench pressing more or running a longer distance or running faster or whatever it is that you choose to do, I think the nice thing about both running and weightlifting is they're very easy to measure. The results are very clear.
Right.
As opposed to basketball, right? Am I better? I think I was better today. I wasn't as good last week. But anyway, like pushing yourself a little bit harder, I think is really valuable. I think the key though is on a regular, like you said, it has to be structured in some way. You can't just say, I'm definitely doing better. You need to measure it and you need to ask yourself, why am I hitting a plateau or what do I need to do to change it up? Because I feel like I might be getting injured if I continue to do this. Obviously, like an analog in your business would be, something in my business is bound to break if I continue to do this way. Like, what am I going to change?
All right, buddy.
We did it.
We did it. Good talking.
All right, man. I'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.